Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 12th of November. As you know by now, I'm sure 11, 12, 13 is today. So we should have a party, right? We should do something because of that day. Well, we're going to talk politics the first hour of our program today and ask a couple questions. The elections took place in New York, New Jersey, Virginia last week. And a lot of people have been analyzing these results, and I think it's worth analyzing with the midterm elections coming up next year. Do the elections show that Americans have had it with the Tea Party, or is that premature? Does it show that Americans have had it with the establishment? What about voter turnout in all of these races, too? I don't know if I've seen a good analysis of that. Is Chris Christie the savior for the GOP? And a closer examination of Tuesday's election in Virginia will learn about how strong the Tea Party is now and why that loss was really fairly close for Cuccinelli. So we'll have two guests with us during the course of the hour and welcome your phone calls as we always do. Also, we'll look at the issues. What were the issues that Chris Christie ran on in New Jersey? What were the issues that were dominant? Was it Obamacare in Virginia? And will that be the issue that will be the one that everybody's campaigning on in 2014? What do you think? Here's our phone number for you to join our conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Chip Saltzman is our first guest. He is a national political strategist. He appears regularly on the Fox News Sunday, The O'Reilly Factor, MSNBC, with Chris Matthews and Al Sharpton. He's worked on many campaigns, Congressman Chuck Fleischman, Governor Mike Huckabee, Bill Frist, and many others. And we're delighted to have you on the show, Chip. Hi.
Kathleen, it's good to be with you on this 11, 12, 13. I agree. We should have a party.
And then at 2:15, it's 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So that's the moment you have to do something.
Definitely have to do something at that moment. I don't know what, but we've got a little time.
I understand you're at the dentist, though. That's not the place to be to have a party, is it?
But the good news is I've got a good checkup.
All right.
So
good for you.
My dentist is a friend of mine that I went to college with, so good. He always takes good care of me.
Good checkup and clean teeth.
Yes.
Your day is made for the party celebration later. Thank you so much for being with us. Let's start with Chris Christie. He is getting so much press since his huge win last week. Time magazine asked this question, and how do you answer it? Is he the savior for the GOP?
Well, I think he's got to be part of the equation. There's no question. I mean, he's obviously won a big race in a blue state. He's had a wonderful 4 years of accomplishment in New Jersey. He's done a lot of good things. Not only for the state, but for the economy and for the residents of New Jersey. I mean, New Jersey is proud again. I mean, we used to make fun of New Jersey, and now New Jersey's got a lot of good things. And, of course, obviously what he did with Hurricane Sandy has been amazing. He's been a very strong leader
in
New Jersey. Now, do I think he's the solution to all our problems? I'm not there yet. But he certainly should be part of the conversation, and I look forward to him now that he's got his reelection done to kind of move into a leadership role with the Governor's Association and help our party move forward from there.
Mm-hmm. When you look at exit polls, and I wonder if he's not looked at very carefully for these very reasons, 21% of the African-American vote, 51% of Latino vote in this race. When we were analyzing what happened in the last presidential race, many were saying that Republicans really had to reach out to minority voters. He seems to be attracting them.
Yeah, there's no question. Those are all good numbers. Governor Huckabee had those kind of numbers when he ran for reelect in Arkansas. He got 50% of the African-American vote in Arkansas and about 30% of Hispanics, almost kind of the opposite. But those good, strong numbers, that's important for the party as we move forward. And I think the message there is not just Chris Christie, but it's our Republican governors really all across the country that are making a difference and working on issues that matter to people, not Republicans, not Democrats, not conservatives, not liberals, but the people in your state. And I think that's why our governors are getting such good scores and doing so well. And I think you're going to see a lot of them get reelected next year, just like you saw Chris Christie get elected this year.
Is there something, Chip, in addition to policy, is he winning as Mike Huckabee had a very likable, forceful personality. People wanted to listen to him. He was genial. He said what he thought about issues. And Chris Christie, a gruffer kind of character, but there seems to be something to the force of just who he is, the force of his personality.
You know, it's an interesting question. It is kind of, as I've moved through the last couple campaign cycles, and as you've seen too, you know, it's almost that we no longer hear speeches. We feel them.
Yes.
You know, when they were talking about the Democrat convention, everybody said Bill Clinton gave the best speech, but nobody could tell you what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Because it felt like it was a good speech. And so that force of that cult of personality really matters in this day and age as we move forward on these elections. I think Chris Christie has obviously got a very forceful personality that demands attention. And I think that certainly helps him as he moves forward to running for president in 16. I think that certainly is a plus.
Is there anything that you want to point to when you look at the results of not only New Jersey, but also what happened in Virginia or in New York, for that matter? Were voters sending any kind of general message? We're tired of bickering. We're tired of certain kinds of policies. We don't like who's in office. We want somebody different. Was there anything like that?
You know, the overall message that I got is every group could find something they agreed with and some group they didn't like. You know, if you were talking about how people were mad and they didn't like incumbents, you poured to Chris Christie, who obviously won a big number. If people were too conservative, you can say, well, Cuccinelli lost. If they were too liberal, you can say that this happened. And there's just too many numbers that kind of show all the ways. I think what we see is that the electorate is moves on the issues of the day. And I mean, that's why I think it's hard to say what happens today is going to affect 2014 and going to affect 2016, because what we saw in the Virginia race, McAuliffe opened up a big lead during the government shutdown. And you know, there was some polling that even showed it double digits. But when Obamacare became the forefront, what was the issue of the day, that's when Cuccinelli started catching up and closed to a 2.5% gap, when nobody thought that was there. And to be honest, the Virginia race is tough to really get any real value out of, simply because most people didn't like either one of those candidates. So, it was almost a race to the bottom, not the race to the top.
So what does that say about us? We are only tuned into the news of the moment?
Well, I tell you what, voters can be tuned in to the views of the moment. And when you're talking about a race to the bottom where both people were underwater, both candidates, their approval ratings were less than their disapproval ratings. You were talking about in the last 10 days, Ken Cuccinelli was outspent $2.2 million to $300,000 on TV, and most of it being negative. And when I say when the water is so muddy that the voter can't see, then it's the issue of the day that prevails. And as I say, it's always what's the easiest thing to understand? The easiest thing to understand 6 weeks before that election was the government was shut down and they wanted to blame the Republicans, so Cuccinelli wasn't doing so great, especially in Northern Virginia. And the issue of the day, the last 10 days of the election, where a lot of people were starting to really tune in and make their decisions for the final time, was Obamacare was a complete disaster. And they were going to blame Obama, and in lieu of Obama being on the ballot, they were going to blame McAuliffe.
Mm-hmm.
And there just wasn't enough gas in the gas tank to get Cuccinelli over the finish line. But my guess is, though, tracking numbers over the last 10 days, if you believe it was double digits 2 weeks out, he was dropping about a point a day.
Uh-huh. So how did Virginia wind up with two less than stellar candidates?
You know, it's amazing how that happens. You're thinking about this is the race for governor that you usually get your stars running.
Right.
And I think Ken Cuccinelli is a star of our party. I think he did a great job as attorney general, but he didn't win. And you can say it was a bad campaign. You can say he was too conservative. Look, every time you lose, it's all everybody in the world tells you why. And then when you win, everybody takes credit. But at the end of the day, this was a guy who I think is a good man, who was a good job as attorney general, but he lost his race for governor. And I don't think there was any overlying issues in the campaign. It wasn't a great campaign. They got outspent 3-1, and the issues of the day that really dominated the conversation. I think Ken Cuccinelli, if he won, would have been a very good governor for Virginia. But he also had the current Republican governor of Virginia had some problems in the last couple weeks,
mm-hmm.
and I think that hurt as well. You know, I think at the end of the day, you know, in lieu of you running for governor, I'm not sure there is a better candidate, right? I mean, most people don't want to run. I mean,
right.
really. struggle to find good, qualified men and women that want to put themselves in that fight. And I like Ken Cuccinelli. Could I name five other people that may have been better? Maybe. But, you know, Ken Cuccinelli was a good man, and I was proud to support him. He just didn't win.
Yeah. Well, Chip, what about the question, which I'm sure the Republican Party is asking itself, is, and you just said it, was he too conservative? Are we entering on social issues like gay marriage, yeah, and it looks like, you know, states are moving in a different direction than Ken Cuccinelli or some other conservative members of the Republican Party. So is that the future? Is it waning in strength? Is it problematic for Republicans?
You know, I don't think if we're going to be successful in the future, we change who we are. That's never a winning scenario. I think what we need is somebody that can communicate what their positions are and why. And steal a quote from my boss, my former boss, Mike Huckabee: I'm a conservative, I'm just not angry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes our conservative talkers and our conservative elected officials come across as they're very angry about it, and I think that tends to turn off voters. Look, there's a lot of people that have been involved in politics a long time, and I've been involved now 20 years. I've only found one politician I agree with 100% of the time, and that's me.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else I'm going to have disagreements with. The deal is, can our candidates articulate why they believe in certain issues? And when people disagree with them, do they feel like it's an honest disagreement, or do they feel angry about it and they feel mad about it? We're always going to have those disagreements, but I don't think we change who we are as a party to move forward. I think we do a better job messaging why we believe in those things.
What about the idea of compromise? You contrast Cuccinelli's beliefs on certain issues with Christie, who opposes gay marriage but called off the legal fight to block same-sex unions, flips positions to support discounted college tuition for undocumented students. His record on guns, he wouldn't get an A rating probably from the NRA. There are a list of things where he's kind of not necessarily changed his mind, but he's given up on the fight in order to have things move forward. Does that say something? Do people want that?
Yeah, I think there's two things I would tell you that. One is Chris Christie had a record as governor. That's why he got reelected. And his record was more about job creation and getting the budget under control in New Jersey, right? 2 years ago, that was the fight, the teachers' unions, fighting the pension program, fighting the budget, and he got that under control. And I think that's why he's been such an effective governor. And I also think that as governor, when you're running for reelection, you have that record to run on. And most of those issues, you actually have to do something about it. You just can't talk about it. And Christie had a great record in doing all those things. I think that's one why he got reelected. I think that's why he had really no major opposition run against him, and I think that's why he ran up the board. I think as Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli's job was a little bit different. Now, he did take on Obamacare in the courts, but that was his job as Attorney General. He had that opportunity to challenge that as a states' right issue, and whether it was what it was, and he did that. Now, did that cost him the governor's election or not? You know, I don't think so. It might have. But at the end of the day, you've got to be able to do your job if you're going to be running for governor or everything else. And as Attorney General, I think Ken Cuccinelli did a good job as Attorney General. Obviously, he fell short in the governor's race.
We'll take phone calls. We have two guests this hour. Chip Saltzman is with us for a little while longer, national political strategist. You see him all over TV, and he's worked on Governor Mike Huckabee's campaign and other Republican notables, where we have asked him to analyze the results of, particularly from the Republican point of view, Chris Christie's win in New Jersey and Ken Cuccinelli's defeat, although narrow, in the state of Virginia. We have yet to ask him about what happened in New York. What have we learned from all of this? What have we learned? What have you learned? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. Our lines are all filled. You can email if you'd like, talk at WPR.org, or you can just wait for a line, huh? 800-486-8655. Pat in Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Pat.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
All right, Pat. How are you?
I'm good. I think Virginia, you guys are probably spot on with your analysis there. I do believe if the race would have lasted a few more days and Cuccinelli might have been able to pump a little bit more money into his operation, that could have been a very different result. in saying that, as a Republican, and I'll come straight out and say it, I do believe we need to moderate our position a little bit on some of the social issues. I feel this is a trap that the media loves to try and get Republicans to talk about, and we can see that from Todd Akin to Murdoch to Sharon Engel. And, you know, I think it's something we need to turn the page on a little bit. And I think especially right now, there's such a good case to be made for the Republican Party about government, big government run. And all we need to do is look at the issue of the day right now. We can't even design a website. Everything that we talked about, and Republicans and the Tea Party were trying to shout and scream at the top of their lungs about people losing their plants, people losing their doctors. You know, the media brushed this off as conjecture, and this is just somebody's opinion. Well, they're not opinions anymore. They're facts.
All right. Thanks, Pat. Is this the issue? And are Democrats vulnerable unless things turn around in a hurry on the Affordable Care Act? Will it be the issue, Chip?
Yeah, today it absolutely is. And, unfortunately in politics, 6 months is a lifetime. We don't know what it's going to look like going into October of next year. But this was the dominant issue in the Virginia race for the last couple weeks. This is a no-win for Obama and the Democrat administration. It's the rollout has been just terrible. The website, we can go on another hour just about the website, but this is a real problem for the administration. I don't know if you can actually call it an apology what the president did. It's almost like if I offended you, I'm sorry, kind of apology. But it was not a good week two or three for the administration.
No, it wasn't.
And if this keeps going, they've got to call in the MASH unit and stop the bleeding.
Yeah, it is a huge mess for them. There's no doubt about it. A huge mess.
And now they've got, I think, what are their grand total so far that people have signed up is 50,000. And I think their projections were had at about 500,000 at this point. So there's still a long way to go. But this could be the defining issue for not only for this election, but for the Democrat Party as we move forward.
Thanks, Pat, very much for the call. What about Pat's point that on some of the social issues, and let's center for a moment on gay marriage, because slowly but surely things are really changing. Actually, some would say it's happened pretty quickly on what Americans think about this issue. So how does the Republican Party deal with that? Because the Tea Party has a very different stance than perhaps more, I don't know if you could call them mainstream or moderate Republicans.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think Pat actually brings up a very good point. And then just to kind of read that out, I was speaking to a class at Vanderbilt University yesterday. 25 of the brightest folks we had, I guess. And I asked, I always try to kind of poll the group I'm talking to, anybody that doesn't support gay marriage, and not one hand went up. I mean, it's if you're under 40, this is an issue. It either doesn't matter, or they don't understand it. They don't understand why people are for not letting people do this, and so this becomes kind of almost an age issue for us. And again, if you're over 60 or 65, this is an issue that's pretty personal to you. And it's almost a difference in generational as well. And I'm not saying that there's 70-year-old people that are for gay marriage. Sure there are. I mean, I'm being a little bit kind of oversimplomatic here. And so this is an issue that we've got to be careful on, but it's also an issue that we have to explain. And something that we have to talk about. And we can't come across as mean or bigoted or anything like that. And, of course, I think sometimes we do. And, of course, sometimes the media helps us. But just because somebody's for traditional marriage, I don't think you can call them anti-gay or a bigot. I think they can say that marriage has been defined for a man and a woman for a couple of thousand years. And if we want to call it something else, civil union or something else, I think there's a lot of Republicans that are okay with that. A lot of conservatives are okay with that. Now, I think some of the conservatives think government should be out of the whole deal anyway. So we've got to be very careful on how we explain this, and we've got to be, more importantly, we've got to do it from a point of compassion and understand that this is a very personal issue. It matters deeply, especially if you're a gay couple that are in love. I mean, this is something this is your number one issue, and you can't come across and say, no, you can't, because that's just the way it is, because that's not even a conversation.
Al in Land O'Lakes, hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi,
you still give me a glimmer of hope for our species. That being said, big business is willing to destroy the planet for short-term profits. I regard this as just incomprehensible. And because of their power over the political process, you hear a deafening silence in the U.S. Congress and in other bodies around the world about the severity of the problem. Global warming is a far more serious problem than Al-Qaeda, the economy, or anything else. I just got a survey from the National Democratic Party, and they asked me to prioritize 9 priorities, which, you know, they could work on. And the environment wasn't even mentioned. Mm. And that said, did you see what happened to the Philippines?
Yeah.
It's coming right here.
Yeah, thank you, Al. It is an issue. I don't know if you saw the Philippines delegate to the UN conference on climate change taking place in Warsaw this week, but it's worth seeing because if indeed this is a huge contributor to these kinds of storms, don't you think Al has a point that, by golly, we better pay attention to this?
Well, you know, I'm not an Eagle Scout, but I was a Boy Scout, and one of our always true things is always leave your campground better than when you found it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can be a pretty good philosophy for us as a human race, or as he said, a species. We need to leave our planet a little better than when we found it. And I think the good news for us is that we're starting to find a whole lot of new technologies that we can use to do that. Now, you know, like I said, I'm not one of these people. I think the gasoline engine is going to be around for a while. You know, I don't think everybody's going to drive a car with a battery tomorrow. But the more we can do that, the more we can use renewable resources like solar and wind and some of those things, obviously the better it is. And so, again, you know, you always use the Boy Scout credo, let's leave the campground a little bit better than we found it. And if we can do that with the environment, you know, some of the people in politics don't understand it when I say this, but I'm a hunter and fisherman, so I consider myself a great conservationist because I want the places I hunt and fish to be there for my kids to hunt and fish when I'm gone. And that takes some planning, and that takes some there's work to be done.
Yeah. So why isn't a lot of work being done on this? Isn't this an issue that could be bipartisanship, that we could bring the best minds together and figure out if indeed global warming is creating these huge storms and then do something?
Well, you know, there is some people in the Congress that do this. Lamar Alexander has been a Republican that has crossed the aisle on this issue on many times. He considers himself, and I've seen it up front, he is a conservationist. He wants to do some things that make sense for the long-term haul. But this can be a bipartisan issue. I mean, you know, there's very few things we tend to agree on in Congress. But I think this could be an issue that we can agree on. You know, I am not of, you know, as I'm saying this, I don't believe in every global warming research paper that I've seen that the ice caps are melting and we're going to be underwater in 10 years. But I do think there's some things that we can do and we should do, not only as a country, but as a people, to lead the world in doing some things so we can prevent some of those things from happening.
I like what you said, leave the campground in better shape.
That's right.
We'll take one more call for you. It's Guy in Appleton. Hi, Guy.
Hi. How's it going? Earlier, your guest mentioned that we don't need to change who we are. I disagree. We do because we have, we've changed who we were to what we are now, and that has changed us in the wrong direction. And as far as getting the message out better, actually, they got the message out great. That's why they lost.
Wait, you're losing me a little bit, Guy. Where were we that we should be now?
Well, I grew up with Eisenhower Republicans, where they were fiscally conservative, actually, you know, worked to keep the debt down. And now they still keep the label as fiscally conservative, when the exact opposite is true. They're the ones who spend the money, and they're the ones who run up the credit card. So, and it's perception. And I do agree, you know, with your guest about leaving the campsite better. More people should, you know, look at it that way. But I disagree that it's not that the message wasn't the problem. It was getting the message out. No, the message got out fine, and that was the problem.
Chip?
Yeah, well, I think what Guy said at first was, you know, is what we're, I guess I'm trying to phrase it how he said that it's what you – we don't change what we believe. And as I said, more importantly, I think actions speak louder than words. And I think that's what Guy is getting point to. And I think that's why you saw, to be honest, getting back to where we started, Chris Christie doing so well in New Jersey, because his actions outspoke anybody else's words. His actions outspoke millions of dollars if they came in and said negative ads about Chris Christie because people didn't believe it because they saw his actions.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I think that's where we have to go as a party. You know, talk is cheap. And we've got to elect governors and senators that actually do something. They have a record, and they're willing to run on that record, not hide behind it. And I think that's always a challenge in political campaigns. Obviously, that's my business. That's what I do. And so you obviously want to put an exclamation point on all things that good and hide things that aren't so good. But I think if Republicans are truly going to be successful in the 2014 elections and then in the 2016, we better nominate some people that have a record of accomplishment and people that are smart enough and proud enough to run on those accomplishments, have a good message, and a good messenger, and I think that's an equation for victory for us.
And before we say goodbye to you, do you want to cite any of those people, Chip?
Well, you know, obviously I have an affinity for governors. I mean, Mike Huckabee is somebody that I think is a great messenger for our party with a great record. Like I said, he was when he got reelected, he had 50% of the African-American vote. I think Governor Walker in Wisconsin has got an unbelievable record that he can run on, and I certainly hope he considers running for president in 2016. I can tell you on a recent trip to Iowa, there was some definite buzz about him. Chris Christie certainly won, and then you've got a bunch of others. I tend to stay on the governor's side of deal on the aisle because I like these folks that every day they go to work and accomplish stuff. I want to throw in Susana Martinez's name. I think she is just an incredible story and a great record of her own. And so I think you're going to see a lot of these governors run for re-election in November 2014. And I think you're going to see a few of them, about January 15, announced for President of the United States. And I think that's going to be a very good thing for our party.
Chip, thank you ever so much. Join us again. I enjoyed talking with you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Chip Saltzman, national political strategist. You see him frequently on TV, Fox News, O'Reilly Factor, and MSNBC with Chris Matthews and Al Sharpton, has been a staffer for Governor Mike Huckabee, Bill Frist, and other Republican notables. We're spending this hour, we thought we would devote a whole hour to what we learned from last week, and I'm not sure what all we learned from what happened in New Jersey, and we're going to spend more time on Virginia this hour. Our guest, Chip, talked about the fact that we had two kind of flawed candidates in Virginia, and did we learn any? Actually, I want to know how many people showed up to vote. Why did we get two flawed candidates? Would Cuccinelli would have won? Would he have won if the Republican Party had poured more money in there? Did we learn anything about his message on social issues? Does the Republican Party need to change in order to cast the net a little bit wider in terms of who they're going to get voting for them? So we'll talk about all of that. Jeff Shapiro is joining us now. Jeff is Richmond Times Dispatch political reporter and columnist. He has covered Virginia elections and the state capitol for some 30 years. So he's got a nice, strong history that are behind his words and his thoughts this conversation. We're going to be welcoming phone calls for him as well. Our phone number remains 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Is it a question of stark choices? Does the Republican Party need to go more the direction of candidates like Cuccinelli, or did Chris Christie's victory say something about what Republicans like? And it wasn't just Republicans who voted for him. What about the size of that victory? What was learned from that? We certainly welcome your phone calls, and we'll take them momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, John Katz will be with us. If you listen to our show over the years, you know that we've interviewed John many, many times. He's just a lovely writer. He's written about his animals on Bedlam Farm in upstate New York. He came to our studio, was it last year or 2 years ago? Time goes so fast. And we had a great conversation and had a dog with us from the Humane Society. This book that he's written now is slightly different in that it centers on a human being, Maria, who is now his wife. They've been married for a little over 3 years. And the story is The Second Chance Dog, a love story. The dog that he's writing about is Frida, and Frida was Maria's dog and a fiercely protective dog, the kind of dog you might be afraid of because he barks so ferociously and wouldn't let anybody near Maria. So it's a story of John Comacortin, Maria, and how they both have worked to allow the other person to become whole in many ways, both of them suffering from some problems, severe problems in their lives. It's really a love story. It's a beautiful love story, and it's beautifully written. So John Katz will be with us the second hour of our program today. We are having a hard time reaching our guest from Richmond, Virginia, so we'll just keep trying. And in the meantime, we'll welcome phone calls. Same kind of topic. You can be our guest for a while here. What do you make of the election results in Richmond? What does it say about the Tea Party, if anything? What do you think of Chris Christie's win? Is he the star now of the Republican Party and the way that the Republican Party has to go to win again? Will Obamacare be the issue that everybody will be running on, or if the website and everything is up and running well, will it be another issue? Are we the kind of people who take whatever the issue of the day happens to be? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. David is calling in, and thank you, David. You're saving the day, sir. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to comment that the Christian extremism that Ken Cuccinelli represented was really a large part of the problem. One of the other runners in the governor's race was Robert Sarvis,
mm-hmm.
Who's a libertarian, and he's pro-choice, pro-marriage equality. He was opposed to the mandatory ultrasound bill that Bob McDonald had passed that Cuccinelli supports. Sarvis basically drew votes away from McAuliffe, not from Cuccinelli, and it'd be very, very unlikely that there'd be crossover votes in that area. And then the other thing is Cuccinelli wasted a lot of taxpayer money as a climate change denier. He sued one of the leading climate scientists in the country who works at the University of Virginia.
Hmm.
And then he also, when he was a state legislator, in 2004, he blocked the reform of Virginia's sodomy law, which the state was trying to reform in response to Lawrence v. Texas. And as a result of that, as a result of Cuccinelli's action, there's apparently about 60 pedophiles that will now be released because they could not be properly prosecuted under that law.
Well, what do you make of the fact, then, that McAuliffe had what Chip was saying was maybe a double-digit lead, and then all of a sudden Cuccinelli is getting closer and closer and closer, and it was a close election. Was it that people mostly were upset about the Affordable Care Act, do you think?
I think that was a large part of it, and also Cuccinelli just was not a good candidate to begin with. Or McAuliffe, excuse me, was not a good candidate. But I think the point I was trying to make about the plurality issue is that you'll as these issues in the public change, so whether it's Obamacare or whether it's the government shutdown or you know what, so those will pull the electorate one way or the other, or at least it'll pull the public opinion poll.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point you reach a bottom in terms of where the change will occur. And because of Sarvis' positions and McAuliffe's positions relative to where Cuccinelli was,
mm-hmm.
I think Cuccinelli basically got the maximum he was able to get in that race.
Mm-hmm. Are you from Virginia? You sound pretty
knowledgeable. No, I'm from Wisconsin. I do some work in Virginia. So.
Mm. And you're a political junkie.
Exactly. Yeah. So I appreciate the show.
That's okay. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much for calling. We did find our guest, Jeff Shapiro, is joining us now from the Richmond Times-Dispatch, a political reporter and columnist who's covered Virginia elections and the state capitol for some 30 years. And I'm glad we found you. Hi, Jeff. Thanks again for being with us.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I apologize for my tardy arrival.
That's all right. We just took some callers. And I will just have my first question be some of what our last guest, our last caller was just talking about. We want you to center on Virginia here. And our last guest said that both of the candidates were kind of second-rate candidates in the gubernatorial race. Would you agree with that description? Were they?
Well, that may be a bit harsh, but I do think it was clear that Virginians were generally underwhelmed by their choices, and that there was a goodly amount of voting against candidates as opposed to for candidates. An interesting finding in a pre-election poll by the Washington Post indicated that 64% of McAuliffe voters said they were voting against Ken Cuccinelli, not voting for Terry McAuliffe.
Goodness gracious. What kind of turnout did you have in Virginia, Jeff? Was it big?
No, and I think that was one of the reasons why this election was a lot closer. We had a turnout of about 38%, and when there is a thin turnout, more conservative, largely white voters have a disproportionate influence on the outcome. I guess a simpler way of putting it is that with every election in Virginia, there tend to be different electorates. For example, in 2008 and 2012, this state was carried easily by Barack Obama, but the turnouts exceeded 73%. When more people participate in elections in Virginia, the temperament, if you will, of the electorate
right.
tends to be more moderate. That's more favorable to Democrats.
Yeah. Our last caller, who's a political junkie who is following Virginia pretty closely, described Ken Cuccinelli as a Christian extremism. He was a Christian extremist, is what he said. What do you think of that classification? Did people call him such in Virginia?
Not really. I think it's important to point out, and this is perhaps not evident to voters largely because of this shouting match on television and on the Internet and through social media, Ken Cuccinelli is not a political figure who is easily pigeonholed. Yes, he is very conservative on social issues. He is hostile to abortion. He is hostile to gay rights. But he has been very interested in things that one wouldn't ordinarily associate with very conservative Republicans. For example, when he came to the legislature, he raised questions about some of the investment policies of the Public Employee Pension Fund. He didn't like the idea that perhaps money was supporting the genocide in Darfur. I think this made him sort of interesting to people who might otherwise be dismissive of him. When he was elected Attorney General, clearly with the governorship in mind, he took a great interest in these innocence issues, doing what could be done to make it easier for people wrongly convicted of crime.
Oh, interesting.
To clear their names.
Mm-hmm.
The legal hurdles for that process in Virginia are considerable.
Mm-hmm. And tell me what happened in the last weeks of the campaign. Was it true that he was narrowing the gap so significantly and so quickly that if more money had been poured in by the Republican Party or if he had two more weeks to campaign, he indeed could have won that race?
Well, that's certainly what the Republicans say, and I have no doubt that Mr. Cuccinelli was closing the gap largely because of this special emphasis, maybe overemphasis, on the ACA, Obamacare, the president's health care reform initiative. I suspect that says more about Virginia's changing politics than anything else. We have a series of off year elections in this state. Our election schedule historically was set up to minimize the influence of federal affairs on state politics. As the state has grown and has become, as more and more Virginians come from other states, our politics have become much more national. So, long story short, that the emphasis was helpful. I don't know that that would have necessarily won the election. The problem for Mr. Cuccinelli was that he had a divided Republican base.
Mm-hmm. And was it true that earlier on McAuliffe was doing well when the government had it shut down, and then Obamacare was brought out and it was disastrous? She couldn't get on the website, so Cuccinelli had a natural issue here, and we're so fickle and so just tied into the news of the day that we went with whatever the big, and they were both big issues, so we went with whatever the issue was of the day?
Well, both big issues in Virginia. Big issues in Virginia in large part because of Virginia's dependence, some might say over-dependence, on federal beneficence.
Right,
more than a quarter of this state's economy is attributed to federal spending, military and civilian. So when Washington goes dark, that affects a lot of people, and it clearly angered a lot of people, not just in the Washington suburbs. All along the Interstate 95, I-64 corridor, if you were to picture in the mind's eye a map of Virginia, those interstates extending south from Washington, D.C., picking up Richmond, and then swinging east to the seacoast, all along those two interstates, one, the bulk of Virginians live, and two, the bulk of federal dollars flow. So the shutdown in Washington had a huge impact. And again, in a state where now a narrow majority of the people who live here weren't born here, voters are more inclined to respond to these external Reed national influences.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit more about what many have described as a split in the Republican Party, even though you've described Cuccinelli in a more in a fuller way than I've heard him described. He still is more closely aligned. Our governor went to campaign for him. Our governor is thought of as fairly conservative. So there's a lot being made, as you know, of the question, which way the Republican Party? Are they going to choose the path that will lead them to defeat because they're going to be too conservative? Or are they going to embrace politicians like Chris Christie, who can appeal to more minority voters and be more inclusive? Which way?
Well, the problem that Republicans have, until the apparatus, the nuts and bolts of the party are taken over by more moderate Republicans, the party is going to remain on a fairly conservative course. And that, gerrymandering that we have legislative districts in which politicians shop for voters as opposed to voters shop for politicians, that will only reinforce the tendency of the Republican elective class to respond to this very narrow, increasingly conservative band of the electorate. There are more moderate Republicans who could stand up and say, you know, there has got to be a better way, but making that argument is not without its perils. These are people who have to worry about nomination fights,
right?
Challenges primarily from the right.
And were there a lot of moderate Republicans who wanted to run in that race in Virginia?
In the governor's race, there was, comparatively speaking, a more moderate alternative, Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling, who frankly has a record as conservative as Mr. Cuccinelli, but his style is completely different. He was seeking the nomination, but when it was clear that he wasn't getting traction within the party because of the control that the most conservative Republicans have over the nominating process, he conceded the nomination to Cuccinelli. However, Mr. Bowling refused to endorse Cuccinelli for the governorship.
Huh.
And that was emblematic of the concerns that more moderate or comparatively more moderate Republicans still have with Ken Cuccinelli.
So why didn't the Republicans give him more money, Cuccinelli?
If one were to believe in conspiracies, one would conclude that at one point in the election, maybe the second week of October, it looked like the McAuliffe candidacy was a lock and a relatively easy one at that. So Republicans fell back and tried to prop up the candidate for attorney general. He was considered sort of the firewall against a possible Democratic sweep. That election essentially ended in a tie. The votes are still being counted. At this point, the Democratic candidate has a very slight lead. That's 130 votes out of over more than 100, more than 2 million cast. That will go to recount, and probably won't be settled until just before Christmas.
Remarkable. All right, in the last couple minutes here, obviously the guy who everybody's talking about in the country, all the political pundits, he's all over the cover of magazines, is Chris Christie. What are people in Virginia saying about Chris Christie? He's just got this huge personality. He knows how to get the microphone. He knows how to say what he thinks about things. And by golly, people seem to love it.
And there might be pockets of Virginia where one will stumble across the occasional more moderate Republican, where Christie Republicanism might be embraced. But for the most part, there's not a lot of wild enthusiasm for him. There have been some early polls that show that Republicans think he could be the nominee and that it might be a matchup with Hillary Clinton, but it's all early days.
Right.
Virginia is a deeply purple state now, and with the McAuliffe victory, Hillary Clinton is perceived as having at least a beachhead in the Upper South. Should she stand for the presidency, she would have in Governor McAuliffe a very helpful ally.
Oh, no doubt about that. And what about this? Do you have a handle on this? You're covering this all the time. I keep asking the question because so many people said, well, everybody blamed the Republicans for the shutdown. At least most people did. They're upset with the Tea Party. People are saying the Tea Party is losing strength. From what you've said so far, it would lead me to believe that you don't think it's really waning, is it?
Well, again, it depends on who you ask. If you're, you know, hanging out with a small group of conservative white males, you're going to get one perspective. If you have a somewhat diverse group, you're going to get an entirely different one. I've returned to the point that we batted around a few moments ago, and that is, when more people participate in these elections, the more moderate the result. That's not good for the Republicans.
Yeah. It is shameful that so few people vote, isn't it? 38% people turning out, and being a governor of a state is a very important position. That must be irritating to you, a political reporter.
Well, it's not inconsistent with Virginia's history as a southern state, one in which, you know, large numbers of voters, large numbers of citizens, principally African Americans and poor whites, were disenfranchised by literacy tests and poll taxes. The robust voting traditions that one sees in states like Wisconsin, Minnesota, Oregon, not really the practice here, but I think a lot of it has to do with the competition for voters' attention. Candidates are not simply competing with each other; they're competing with whatever's available on that 800 channel cable package. And the candidates have to kind of get through all this clutter. They tend to do so by emphasizing the most basic, emotive, arguably trivial stuff. That gets certain voters to the polls, but it usually leaves others cold and, at home.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, thank you ever so much for being with us. We appreciate your analysis.
Thank you.
Jeff Shapiro, he's a political reporter and columnist for the Richmond Times-Dispatch and has covered what's going on in Virginia for 30 years now. That is amazing. 38% turnout for the governor, even though people weren't wildly enthusiastic about the candidates. That's still pretty low, isn't it? That is low. All right. Thanks to him, and thanks to our earlier guest as well. I thought it was an interesting hour. We love talking about politics here, and I don't know if we came to any conclusions about what we learned from last week, but it was interesting to talk about it. So we thank our guests for being with us, Chip Saltzman, a GOP strategist, and Jeff Shapiro. You just heard from Jeff, political pundit from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. And thanks for all of your calls, everybody, as well. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this show and to Robin Cherry for on-air production. Thanks. Who else should I thank? Thanks to our listeners for listening. We have news coming up momentarily from National Public Radio. Please stay with us for, really, it's a lovely love story. I mean, John writes beautifully about his dogs, but this is how he wooed his wife and the dog who was fiercely protecting her. It's a good story. Stay with us.